just doesn't matter if you have a hot start. Their hot starts are just so much better than yours.
Are we about to say a phrase that we never thought we'd say?
Take a big band hammer to Ancient Stirrings and KCI.
He's kind of like the golden child who can do no wrong.
I think the honeymoon is just about over.
Trying to find that magic modern deck that says play me.
Sad trombone, womp womp.
The message that you're sending when this is one of your flagship cards.
I still think it's kind of like the scourge of the format, if you want to call it that.
Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to another episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease. He's Brian Tibbetts. And he's Matt Hurley. Coming up this week, your shoulder should be in great shape because you didn't even have to swing the band hammer. We'll swing down through the aggressive states, figure out who was taking down GPs. It's all this week on this episode of Tryhards. Guys, what are you drinking as we get this one started? Matt, you were at recovery mode over the weekend after a big party last week. You got something interesting in the glass?
Water. I actually... No, I have to... I had a doctor's appointment this morning, and I didn't know it was going to be a blood draw. And so I've got to go in at 7 a.m. tomorrow to do a blood draw, so I'm not allowed to have anything at this time of night.
AMA. You could have a Bloody Mary AMA against medical advice and see how that goes. Brian, what do you got in the glass?
Lagunitas Daytime Ale, which is kind of similar to kind of like the All-Day IPA. It's not quite as hoppy, but pretty easy drinking. It's nice to have a few of these around. So I've got a couple sitting in front of me, and I'm sure they'll both be gone by the time the cast is over. Sean, what about you?
I think I've brought him up before. I got a buddy of mine. We used to play basketball together up here. He's the liquor manager for the grocery store. He said, hey, come here. You got to try this. After Sam Adams pretty much pulled their support from the Rebel IPA, they threw it into something called the Sam 76. It is supposed to be a blending of both the ale style and the lager style.
Oh.
It's a little weird, I got to tell you. It's definitely got the more malty, like lager finish to it. But the ale part, when you first drink it, doesn't really snap at you. I'm only about two drinks into it, so we'll see how it develops here this evening. But this is one of more of those like curiosities, I think, that I've picked up. And we'll see where it goes from here. That's what we've got in the glass. Hope you've got something delicious as well. What magic did we play? It was what I call retreat weekend for myself. Before I dive headlong into football season, the girl and I go away, spend some time together. That was this weekend. While I didn't get to play, a good friend of the cast, one of our Patreon supporters, was at a legacy tournament, and he played something that he had been playing around with and having a little fun with. He likes the burn deck. He was worried about opposing combo decks being faster than he is. Legacy burns at turn 3 to turn 4 deck, usually with its good draws. So he dipped into some black for Thoughtseize and Dark Confidant. All of your cards have a CMC of 1, maybe 2. Okay, yes, you do have Fire Blast and so forth, but hey, you got to roll the dice. You're playing Burn in Legacy. He said he did like the deck, but ultimately it ended up not coming together as often as he thought it would and went 2-3 in that over the weekend. But if you're looking for something to innovate on, maybe black is the missing color in Burn. A lot of people try white, and then for a while, when you had Treasure Cruise, they paired it with blue. That was so good, it was banned. But Derek, good luck with it. Hopefully, you'll continue to pursue that. Matt, what'd you get to do with the cards this week?
All I got to do was play a Chaos Draft. I picked Core 2014, Origins, and Masters 25.
Wow, that's so random.
I know, it was a true Chaos Draft. That's what we did. Ended up pulling a Sulphur Falls, Blue Red Quick Land, and a Port. Okay, I'm happy with this. Ended up in a actual blue-white kind of aggro deck. I'm sorry, a red-white aggro deck with a blue splash. It was a lot of fun. I just got beat down by Flyers. They do those every once in a while, and they're fun to do. Kind of this new core set just isn't doing it for me anymore, and most of the people at the shop agree.
Well, one tryhard this weekend was getting after it with the big dogs at a PPTQ. Brian, what'd you choose to play, and how'd it go down for you?
I stuck with Mardu Pyromancer, which I've been on for quite a little bit of time. Had good reps with it. Things did not swing my way. I felt like it was a decent choice, and then I saw and surveyed the room and kind of realized that I was bringing there's a new song out there called You Brought a Lemon to a Knife Fight, and that's kind of how I felt a little bit going in. So I finished 1-3 and then dropped after that because I was just kind of like, yeah, this is a little bit too miserable. I'm going to get on home. It was interesting. Round one, I played against Burn. I always forget how good the modern Burn draws can be, because even when you snipe a card with Thoughtseize and you snipe a card with Inquisition and you land a Young Pyromancer, sometimes it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter if you have a hot start. Their hot starts are just so much better than yours. So that was a quick 0-2 loss. I got there in round two. Round three, I played against Saheeli Combo. That was interesting, and that was a really fun three-game match. I was feeling just snake bit because in game three, I had him dead on board. He had one card left in hand, and I had an Inquisition, and I Inquisitioned him, and he had Felidar Guardian. And of course, Inquisition can't take Felidar Guardian, so all he did was play it and combo me out on that turn. Otherwise, he would have been toast. And that was, I mean, we had like a giggle over it. He's like, boy, if that would have been a Thoughtseize, and I'm like, yeah, you know, my kingdom for a Thoughtseize there. That was a little interesting. I got then, I played against a control deck that went to a close three games again, but just couldn't fight against the colonnades and everything else. And then I played against the mono green Tron, got there easily game one, and then game two and game three just could not snipe the cards out of his hand that I needed to, and he just ended up Ugining me and carning me out in games two and three. So it was a pretty disappointing PPTQ, to say the least. I was not thrilled with how things went. I just didn't feel like I drew well. I feel like when you draw Young Pyromancer in the first three turns, or get to play Young Pyromancer in the first three turns, my odds of winning that game are so much higher than if I have to just lean on Collective Brutalities, Inquisitions, and Thoughtseize. It just then becomes a little bit of a dud. The one change I did make, and I was very, very happy with this, Liliana the Last Hope. I split one Last Hope and one Veil, and I kept another Last Hope in the board. That card, paired with Bedlam Reveler and Kolaghan's Command, is so good at getting back your Revelers and your Young Pyromancers from the graveyard. The mill two, return a creature to your hand, and like being able to replay Reveler, throw three cards to the bin, draw three. It's just ridiculous. And everybody's like, wow, I haven't seen that in play. And it's, you know, it didn't ultimately get me there, but I think that engine is still very, very powerful. So I was very, very happy with that. And I think I would probably go two Last Hope mains moving forward.
Were you able to kill a lot of stuff with the Last Hope?
Well, no, I actually never killed anything. That was the frustrating thing. The targets I had available to me were like Goblin Guide, Swift Spear. So I was able to kind of like blank the damage for a couple turns, but I was never able to kill anything outright. It's just one of those things where it just kind of bought me some time, but it never did what I wanted it to do, which is clear the board. Because the minus two, minus one, if I would have faced humans, I think that would have been a much bigger thing to take care of some things. If I would have seen some of those one toughness creatures, it just would have been a much different game. So that's when Veil shines a little bit better, when you're able to just make them sacrifice, you know, a creature, and you're just cleanly answering something.
Do you think the deck is still well positioned in the format, or has maybe the evolution of the metagame moved past where Mardu Pyromancer is going to be a big threat?
Mardu Pyromancer, I still think, is one of the fairest decks out there. It's kind of like the Jund deck of the current metagame, and it does what it does very, very well. The room this weekend was full of Burn, and it was full of blue-white control. Pretty bad matchups for Jund, or excuse me, for Mardu Pyromancer. So I think it's probably time to maybe look somewhere else. I was thinking this whole time, because the other pet deck I've been working on is the kind of the blue red thing in the ice deck that just flips it and, you know, can kind of combo off pretty easily. And I thought that might have been a good choice for the weekend and a good choice going forward. But I will say that the Shark Tank represented itself very, very well. Six of us playing over the weekend. Robert Knowles lost in the semis to eventual champion Eric Hoffman. Winning PPTQs is like his job, and he took it down with Infect. I just have to give a shout out to Eric. In the finals, he was able to get there by dealing 16 damage with a Birds of Paradise over two turns in the finals against blue-white control. So that's quite the feat. So hats off to you, Eric.
See, if you don't bolt the bird or push the bird, that bird's going to do you in one way or another. So that's the lesson. Like,
we all know to bolt the bird. Why didn't they bolt the bird?
That's the lesson. You got to make sure you get the bird off the table. Well, from the happenings in the central part of the U.S., let's swing out to both coasts for the GPs this weekend. Matt, you had your eye on GPLA. How'd it go down?
1,071 players showed up to GPLA. There was some controversy there, but it ended up being taken down by Logan Nettles, who actually beat Ben Friedman in the finals. These were pretty standard deck lists. Logan was playing black-red aggro, and then Ben Friedman was playing blue-black midrange. There was a white-blue Godfrey's Gift deck in the top eight that was not your normal one. It was from, if you go back about 9 months or so, that's kind of where that deck is. And then there was a Grixis midrange. I was actually running two of Liliana Death's Majesty in the main there, but it was also running three Nicol Bolas. So we finally saw some Nicol Bolas up on the board. I would call it the little bit of controversy that was going on was Alex Bertoncini took fifth place. And there's, of course, because of his past, there was some nonsense going on there. Other than that, looked like a pretty successful tournament. I didn't get to watch much of it at all. I did kind of go through some of these, some of the decks. There's some Turbo Fog decks, so the Nexus of Fate is still running, running around out there. It's not crazy powerful, but it's there. In general, it's the same black-red aggro, blue-white, Godfrey's Gift, blue-black midrange, those types of cards. Brian, did you see anything on this tournament that was interesting?
The deck that I saw that I thought was pretty cool, Daniel Wong had kind of like a cat tribal deck, which looked pretty cool. It was like a ramp deck that ran like Hour of Promise, Spring to Mind. It looked pretty cool. So I like that. It was interesting to see the decks from this GP and the decks from Providence that I kind of zeroed in on a little bit more. But I'm curious, what was some of the hubbub with Bertoncini this weekend?
Everyone was kind of eyeballing him and saying, okay, does he deserve to be here? He has a history of known cheating. So that's kind of people say, oh yeah, I don't know if he cheated me or whatever the case may be. So it's just the normal stuff, really.
Sean, did you see anything from LA that caught your attention?
Nothing that was too crazy. There were some interesting things this weekend, but LA was the one of the two standard tournaments that I thought played it closest to the vest. So with that in mind, Brian, what'd you see go down at GP Providence? Because this was the other big coastal GP.
This was the big coastal GP, but I was a little shocked that only 704 people showed up to play. You had quite a good, what I would consider GP, standard GP turnout in LA. Much different market, much bigger place, obviously. But 704 people showed up. Daniel Duffy defeated Oliver Two in the final. Daniel Duffy was on Mono Red Wizards. Oliver Two on Blue White Control. The top eight was basically another blue-white list, two blue-black mid-range decks, and then two other mono-red wizards decks other than Daniel Duffy. So that seemed to be the breakout deck of the weekend, along with Kane Reinhand's just a standard red-black aggro. Right in the 9-16 list, Jarvis Yu, Jonathan Rossum, and Zan Syed all did not make top eight. Couple of them running Grixis Control. Rossum was on blue-white control. So it seemed like the Grixis Control maybe has fallen a bit out of favor, probably lost a little bit due to the speed of this mono-red Wizards deck, which I find fascinating, guys. This is one that's kind of eschewing the Black Splash of Unlicensed Disintegration for just cramming a few more creatures of the Wizards variety and taking advantage of the Wizards Lightning spells. I was surprised to not see that deck as popular in L.A., but what do you think of this deck for the weekend?
I've seen the deck actually running around a bit. It's an interesting deck. I think the Mono Red Wizards is a little bit of a misnomer because there is quite a few cards in there that are not wizards. No, I think it's cool. I think it's just your hyper, let's call it hyper aggressive deck, is basically your new low to the ground aggro deck and then using Wizards Lightning. I mean, it tells you the power of Lightning Bolts if somebody's willing to use subpar creatures, which several of these are subpar creatures, to actually play a Lightning Bolt. And that's the best we have right now in the formats. I'd really like to see maybe a couple more wizards pop out of Ravnica when it comes out, which Ravnica is known for wizards. So I think that's a possibility.
Sean, what about you? Anything catch your eye from Providence this weekend?
Yeah, it was this Mono Red Wizards deck that did. Its ability to pack more burn, I think, helps it in the matchup with the Mono Green aggro deck. You now can reliably have the burn spell to kill the first Llanowar Elf. You now can get yourself the Chain Whirler where maybe it kills the Straggler Llanowar Elf. I think that a little bit of extra removal to keep the green deck from being able to play Steel Leaf on two probably gives this red deck the operating room that it needs, and that it can finish with that other increased burn that it has left in its hand as well. I really like the ones that are going after the Flame of Keld edition. I think this is, if the deck survives past rotation, it's going to have to take on a different personality. And I think this Wizards deck that is a little bit more traditionally burn heavy is probably going to be the face that we see the Red Menace, obviously barring anything from Guilds of Ravnica that we don't know about right now. But the cards are there to give it some opportunity. I think this might be something that we see with it in its next iteration. But if there's one home for Wizards in this country who love burn, it's Dallas. Every time we go down to the Lone Star State, the really aggressive strategies and the burn strategies seem to jump to the forefront. 271 teams turned out. In the end, it was the team of Joe, Basoko, and Thomas knocking off Dicandio, Miriam, and Grace, Bant Nexus, Humans, and Blue-Black Shadow for the winners in Standard, Modern, and Legacy, overcoming Black-Blue Midrange, Humans, so the Mirror in Modern, and Grixis Delver in Legacy. Guys, I thought it was interesting from this weekend. In my mind, the Team Trios events are really a commentary on what each team either, one, spent time trying to bust in the format, or two, thinks is just the top deck to attack the format that weekend. So Mono Red Aggro had two top four appearances and four day two appearances in this meta. Only Red Black Aggro could match that as far as day two, along with Esper Control, but neither of them had any top four appearances. Humans led the way in Modern with six day two decks, two in the top four, and in Legacy, Grixis Delver with six and two also in the top four. That was the Team Trios this weekend. It seems that each time this happens, there's one or two decks that teams spend time trying to bust. And we saw two different takes, and they were both in Standard, much to my surprise. Teamer Sifter Worm. This is the Standard ramp deck now, and it's in the rug colors. This one looked a lot of fun. It's a big-time game one deck, and I saw it struggle in games two and three. And then the black-red munitions deck. This is a Zombardment-style deck that has popped up in Standard. I think both of these were inspired choices for this weekend, and are we about to say a phrase that we never thought we'd say? Is this Standard format coming to an end too soon? Is there still more research and development that could be done? Or are we just all ready for rotation?
Didn't I say this last week? It seemed like some of the best decks that we saw from the GPs last weekend. You know, we're starting to see that innovation and things. And so, yeah, this Teamer Sifter Worm, I know they kept putting it on camera, and it was kind of like a sad trombone womp womp a couple times because that deck could just get run over a little bit. But I tell you what, there's a lot of game here when they're ramping into 7-8 lands by turn 4 or 5. And you're just waiting for that Sifter Worm to hit the battlefield and for them to just get out of like an aggro deck's range, you know, gaining the life equal to, you know, whatever they're playing. If it's a Sifter Worm, if it's some other big spell from the deck. So I thought this was really cool. Ramping is always, I think, a fun thing for people to do, whether they want to admit to it or not. The Zombardment deck that you were talking about, I think that seems to be a really, really fun style deck. There were cards that were printed kind of at the Dominaria when we had the tower that kind of did damage to you and things. I can't even think of it right now. That was seemed to be kind of something I thought was going to catch on a little bit, but seeing that played this weekend looked like it was going to be a fun choice. So yeah, I would love to see what people did with this massive card pool. So hats off to Ryan Lavery for this black-red munitions deck and running things like makeshift munitions and desecrated tomb. I think that's just awesome.
You know, the best part about these Team Trio weekends is that you get a classic in each event. Legacy, 93 players. Taylor Spain on lands took down Travis Savage on Grixis Control. Matt, the most interesting thing to me in this was that in the top eight, Death and Taxes took places 4, 5, 6, and 7. That's right. 50% of the top eight was Death and Taxes. Now, it didn't take down the title, but for a while, we've heard rumors in Legacy after the ban that if you could find the right Death and Taxes list, You can now get back to the ports being important, so your mana denial is live. You have answers to nearly every other commonly played macro strategy, and that Death and Taxes was really primed for a comeback. Did we see the beginning of that this weekend?
I think so. For some reason, I was trying to figure this out, Justin Harrell, who took 7th, was running snow-covered lands, and I'm not exactly sure why that is. I'm sure there's a reason somewhere, or he's just trying to throw people for a loop. There's definitely different builds here. I'm still on the fence about Brightling within Death and Taxes. I've heard good things. I've heard bad things. Hey, it's a powerful deck, and you have to be prepared for it in this format. The only other one of notice, really, was 10th place, was a blue-green post deck. He was just running the blue-green version that I'm not a huge fan of. Congratulations to him, to Clinton Whitehurst, because that is a very difficult deck to actually run through everything and not get wastelanded out. But it's definitely a cool deck. In 16th place, Brian, this will be right up your alley, you had Jeskai Helm, which is basically Helm of Obedience, Luminarch Ascension.
Oh, I've got it in front of me. I love this deck. This deck is absolutely right up my alley. This is really a sweet list. I love it.
So congrats to Peter Holman, because, again, that's one that you take out of left field, and you took 16th in a classic, so you can't really complain about that.
You give us 2 standard GPs to talk about, and then a team trios, and we're always going to find room to talk about Legacy here on Try Hard. So I knew both of you guys would want your thoughts there. We've already covered Modern and Standard quite a bit here. So just a quick thought after each result. Modern 207, Austin Collins 2-1 over Batu, a car that was Storm over Green Tron. You know what I learned here? Blue-Red Wizards had 2 slots in the top 16, including a 4th. Maybe a burn control style deck, a burn tempo style deck might be in the offing. And then in Standard, 116 players, Cynic Kim on Mono Green Aggro took down Sal Barboza on Red Wizards. And what my takeaway from this, 46 days until rotation with Guilds of Ravnica coming up on October 5th. So that was the SCG Dallas Team Trios weekend. Hope you enjoyed the Magic that you played. Coming up this weekend, you've got a chance to play more Modern. SCG Baltimore will be Modern, and GP Prague going to be Modern as well. And it'll be RPTQ weekend. Those are going to feed into the Guilds of Ravnica Pro Tour. Those are going to be Standard as they begin that qualifying season. That was the tournaments this weekend. That brings us up to this week's news. And it was the news that wasn't. The banned and restricted announcement was earlier today, gentlemen. I took chalk in this one when we were texting over the weekend and said, my prediction is no changes in any format. Next B&R announcement is October 1st. That'll be right before the rotation for Standard. Chain Whirler was left alone in Standard, Matt. Nexus of Fate was left alone in Standard. Matt, were you surprised at all that there was no movement? Did you think there was going to be something? And are you predicting anything for next time?
The only thing I'm really predicting is that they go and they take a big banhammer to Ancient Stirrings and KCI. Is that going to happen? I don't know. I'll be honest. I wouldn't hate it if that happened within Modern, just because those decks are a little too quick for the format. But I still would like to see Chain Whirler gone. I still think it's kind of like the scourge of the format, if you want to call it that. At the same time, I mean, the metagame's adapting to it. I just don't want it to be overpowered once, if they're powering down once Guilds of Ravnica rolls around.
Ryan, what was your thoughts after seeing a blank B&R announcement?
I was pretty happy with the blank B&R announcement, honestly. Chain Whirler is going to have a chance to kind of get settled down by the metagame changes going forward. I think it's had its day in the sun, so we'll probably see a slow decline from that. And I may eat my words here in a month and a half, but, you know, who knows? Nothing in Modern or Legacy really stands out to me. Mox Opal is a card that I think has been thrown around. Ancient Stirrings is another card in Modern that's been thrown around. I wouldn't have been shocked had I seen it, but there's nothing that really is prompting a ban at this time. And I think some of that, you know, at the fever pitch that the community can get into sometimes, we're not hearing that right now, so maybe people are thinking that, you know, things are in an okay position. So I'm looking forward to October 1 and seeing what happens after that.
I may surprise you too with this one. We have been saying for quite some time that control has needed some help in Standard. I think the honeymoon is just about over, and if you take a look at the card that has the linchpin of these uber-controlling blue-white decks. And yes, many of the tools are about to rotate, so maybe you wait until rotation settles out. And this would take an enormous admission that they overshot the mark, because this is one of not only the Keystone cards, but one of the characters they've been pushing as well. But if you want to depower some of the blue-white control that has just been everywhere, I think you'd have to take a look at Teferi.
No, you're not wrong about that. And I think Teferi right now is on a rise. There's no question about that in price and popularity. It's now, I would call it a modern staple in control decks, more so than Jace the Mind Sculptor. And who would have thought that, you know, 6-8 months ago? We've got to keep our eye on Teferi and make sure that that plus one ability is not too demanding for other decks on the interaction front. Because once Teferi reaches his ultimate, it's just game over. There's no way to really deal with that emblem. And in some ways, it's harder on a blue-white Planeswalker than it is to deal with the ultimate of, let's say, Liliana the Last Hope, which is really a game-ending ultimate as well. It's just, it's so much easier to tick up Teferi with all the protection that blue-white offers and all the permission that blue-white has to kind of keep ticking him up. So, yeah, that's definitely a card, I think, Sean, that I'm not overly surprised that you brought that up, but I don't think it's time to ban yet, but we definitely have to keep an eye on it.
The instant mana reduction, the instantaneous and eternal card advantage, and then, and others have said this more eloquently, Matt, than I think I will now, but the play pattern that Teferi encourages is something that is unfun, which is you never have to win the game. You're just playing to not lose. And that sets up some pretty unfun play experiences, because no matter how long that game goes, because of Teferi's ability to put itself back into the deck and you'll never run out of cards. Now you can even add to things like Nexus of Fate or other things that shuffle back in, but just Teferi on its own encourages, I think, a very unfun play pattern. And you're not going to get cards banned for being unfun very often, especially one that's a cover boy like Teferi is for Magic's promotional push. But I think this is a card you have to consider the message that you're sending when this is one of your flagship cards.
I was reading on Twitter about a story, and I don't know which GP it was at. Well, I guess it would be at the T1, because they had surgical extractioned out all of their opponents' win cons. Somebody called a judge on their opponent. Essentially, the judge ruled that they had to count that as a draw because there was no win cons left in the deck along with Nexus of Fate, and that it was a loop that was not advancing the game. So
wait,
that should tell you everything you need to know about that.
Wait. Hold on. Say that again. The judge stopped a game and ruled it a draw?
His opponent exiled his win cons out.
Okay.
And he called the judge. And the judge said, no, there's no win cons in here. So you have no way to win.
Was this
in
the last turn of turns? Or did they stop a match before it went that far?
They went to the game 3 after that. But the judge said, you have no win cons. And I think it was blue, white on blue, white. There was literally no way to advance the game other than they would just cast Nexus of Fate and draw, cast Nexus of Fate and draw.
I don't think I've ever heard of a judge ending a game.
Right. It's the same way if you play like a four horseman deck, or if you, there's some other ones that if you have no win cons, then that's a way that you can actually get a draw out.
We'll see if this ends up, picking up traction going forward. If judges are able to look through your deck and say you don't have any win cons left, to call it a draw in advance to the next game, that is going to put a crimp on some blue-white strategies. I thought it was interesting. No BNR changes. Next one, as I said, coming up on October 1st. Guys, we are far from a pro tour podcast, far from being pros. In fact, it's even in the name of this here show. But I thought there was one interesting thing that came out of a three-part announcement that Wizards is unveiling to update not only the Pro Tour schedule for next year, but part of the Pro community. And that was this in their first announcement. And I know this won't affect 99.9% of Magic players, and it won't affect anybody on this podcast. But Wizards announced that they are searching the Pro ranks for 3, quote, Pro Player Advisors. Their duties would be, and I'm going to summarize here, act as direct conduits to the pro community for Wizards to tap into, to work on the pro tour, work on developing, staging, so forth and so on, and to work on the pro club structure. Now, all of the pros who are tapped by Wizards to do this would still be eligible to play in all pro tours. So this isn't work on the weekend. This is the work to help them organize, refine, do those sorts of things, because there's been a disconnect between WotC and the pro community for quite some time, and other outlets have covered it in greater detail. Matt, if this is the first you're hearing about this, what are your thoughts? I know you've always talked about how to market the game most effectively, and I believe we're on the same page that the pro community can certainly help you do that. Is this a long overdue step? Is this just an extension of an olive branch? How did you react when you heard about this?
So I think it's actually a great thing. They have needed this for a while, and I think that it's a great start. Where it goes from here or how effective it is, I frankly don't know. I hope that they can leverage their pros and find a way to reward them so that they so this is an effective program.
Brian, did you have any advice for WotC as they start this?
If there's one piece of advice I can give to them, is just make LSV part of this. I feel like he is one of the most knowledgeable, one of the most connected, and a member of the community who is universally admired by both players, by both marketers, coverage, you name it. He's kind of like the golden child who can do no wrong. It seems like he would fit in perfectly to be kind of a go-between in whatever spoke of the wheel Wizards needs him to do.
This will be interesting as WotC starts to collect their pro player advisors. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. No, that's not the sound of the elevator drawing closer that you hear. It's a whir of invention. Matt, are we going up or down in this week's elevator?
So Whir of Invention is a card that it just keeps popping up in decks. I say you pick up these foils. The foils are currently between $6 and $7. They might see a small dip at rotation, but it's going to be a very small dip. The standard card is $205. I think that's going to see a pretty significant dip. These are seeing play in Eternal formats and sees play in EDH. So pick up these foils. It's a broken card. It's going to see play in every format outside of standard once it rotates. Easily see that being a $25 card in about a year to 2 years.
Whir of Invention. This week's In the Elevator here on Tryhards. It's time to brew. This is one of our favorite parts of the cast, where we take a card that you didn't even think should ever be sleeved up in any kind of competitive way and prove how bad we are as deck builders. Brian, how are we going to expose ourselves this week?
This is a card that I saw used in a tournament at the PPTQ this weekend, and I kind of had to bend my head around to remind myself what the text was on this. This was brought out of the board in a blue-green Infect Mirror match that I saw. Artifact equipment from Scars of Mirrodin, Livewire Lash. 2 to cast. Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has, whenever this creature becomes the target of a spell, this creature deals 2 damage to target creature or player for the equip cost of 2. Batterskull, Jit, Swords of Fire and Ice primarily, but some of the other swords fit in there as well. And even Manju Gatsari to take care of certain equipments. It kind of get the focus, but I was really happy to see some other equipment popping up in some decks. And it was pretty big game, I must say, out of the board. So, Hurley, I'm going to start with you on Livewire Lash. Other than in the sideboard of a blue-green Infect matchup, where would you slot this card in with 3 minutes to brew?
This is a toughie. I actually played this in Scars Standard. There's been you want to call it maybe like a Taking Turns deck rolling around in Modern. And not the mono blue one that just casts a bunch of take those turns. But there's ones that uses like cards that whenever they become the target of a spell or ability, do some effect. And I think if you can target multiple creatures, you can do 2 damage every single time. And it gets +2/+0. Target a creature 3 times. Something's taking 6 damage. And it's getting +6/+0. So that's not outside the realm of possibility. I even remember one time with this where I shocked like a Primeval Titan or something like that to get the additional 4 damage I need to win. I especially like if you're getting something like Leovold or something like that where there's spot removal in Legacy. Essentially spot removal. There's not a lot of just mass card removal there. I think that's where you want to see this play, where you're punishing spot removal. And I could definitely see it becoming a player within Modern if Modern does slow down a bit. I do like this card a lot, and I think it's going to be a hidden gem moving forward.
I think I look at decks that are going to trigger its own effect, because it says equipped creature gets 2-0. Whenever this creature becomes the target of a spell, deal 2 damage to a target. Not a spell your opponent controls. I'd like to see this in Boggles. You're repeatedly going to target the same hexproof thing, so you can start setting off that 2 damage and controlling some creatures that could be troublesome on the other side of the board. And also, if you looked at, and I know this was a weak PowerPoint for Standard, but if you look at some of the Theros block creatures in like white blue that had triggered abilities when they were targeted as well, and you could start to build sort of a Voltron deck where you then used some beneficial enchantments to get double triggers, live wire lash, and whatever that creature did, I think this could be an interesting building block if you started to play the trigger game. Would you want to go all the way to like Panharmonicon? Probably not, because this is going to be, since it's an equipment, in something that has creatures and IE wants to attack. That's where I look at live wire lash kind of being a possibility and cropping up.
That's kind of how this was used, and I think I read it wrong the first time I looked at it, but then, you know, when it was being used was, obviously, it was played on an infect creature, and then it was being targeted with Vines of the Vast Wood and other assorted thing, Blossoming Defense and other things. And it was just dealing 2 to 2 and 2. And so to either clear the opponent's board or just kind of go the original damage route as opposed to the infect route. So I really like the triggered ability on Livewire Lash with the 2 damage to any target on the new Oracle text. I think that gives big game against Planeswalkers and things. So I could see this cropping up, probably not main board, but especially this card's going to see some play if they ever unban Stoneforge Mystic in Modern. I think this would definitely be a card that you would want on your Bowmat Courier if you choose to play that card.
There's an unholy alliance. Livewire Lash. This week's 3 minutes to brew here on Tryhards. Guys, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? For me, it was a week to vacation. Mention went away for the weekend with the girl, a chance to get away, refresh, kind of give the Heisman stiff arm to Magic for a little bit, refresh my mind, come back and get after it. I'm still working on the Moldrotha Bug project in Modern. That's undergone quite a bit of changes, and I'm looking forward to the next time in, say, 6 or 7 months that I get to play Magic, getting that out and seeing what it can do. Brian, you just had the weekend at a PPTQ. What did you do to get better at Magic?
Realized that I need to do a lot more playtesting and probably reading of the metagame prior to going to a tournament where there's a lot of really good players who have done just that, and maybe pick a better deck for the weekend. Being around the group of people, the conversation that always turns to Magic and why'd you choose the deck and things of that nature. And, you know, I kind of had to sheepishly say, well, this is the one I had put together that I thought would do well and that I really wanted to play. It's, you know, you get kind of stuck on those pet decks sometimes. You have enough reps with it and you're thinking, well, this is the deck that I really want to play. And acknowledging, yes, Modern is still a format where you want to play what you're most comfortable with. And at the same time, sometimes Modern's metagame can shift just on a small tournament that this is not a good choice for the weekend, and putting something together that you can play with just as much ease might have been a better choice. So I think putting a little bit of thought into that as opposed to just kind of rolling it at an FNM, definitely something I took away from the weekend.
Matt, what about you? What'd you do to get better at Magic?
Honestly, I played just a small amount of Magic and it was actually pretty nice. I've just been busy with work and I just haven't been able to get down to play, you know, play the cardboard. I got a really busy week this week as well. I've been sniffing around on Twitter trying to find that Magic Modern deck that says play me, essentially. I just need something to play at the Invitational. So that's where I'm kind of at. I'm just kind of like taking a break while my busy time's going on right now, and then I'll jump back into it probably in the next month or so.
No, you brave soul. Thanks for hanging out with us this week on Tryhards. We'll see what mischief we can get up to again next week. We hope to see you then.